Welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and the studios of WMOT-FM. The ever-prolific Dr. Rami Shapiro is back in print again, and he has a co-author in Reverend Michael Smith for the book Mount and Mountain, A Reverend and a Rabbi Talk About the Ten Commandments, Volume 1. Rami is an adjunct professor of religious studies in the MTSU Philosophy Department, and Michael is senior pastor of Central Baptist Church of Fountain City in Knoxville. We'll talk about the rules of the game that were brought down from Mount Sinai after we acquiesce to the rules brought down from the Cope Administration Building and hear from MTSUnews.com.
Here are a few of the stories now on MTSUnews.com, the university's news and information website. MTSU was among five public four-year institutions in the state to be included in U.S. News & World Report's annual list of the best national universities. The annual ranking assesses more than 1,500 of the country's four-year colleges and universities based on criteria developed by the Carnegie Foundation for the Advancement of Teaching. MTSU celebrated Constitution Day on September 17th by hosting a rare naturalization ceremony held outside Nashville for new Middle Tennessee citizens. Students Mike Patel, LaVon McCurchin, and Tammy Lee were among almost 300 people taking the oath of citizenship. And finally, more than 70 Chinese language teachers attended the Southeast Chinese Language Conference at MTSU September 15th. The gathering focused on curriculum development and teaching methodology. For MTSU News Anytime, go to MTSUnews.com.
Rami, Reverend, Michael, thanks for being with us today. I appreciate it. What made the two of you decide to do this project?
You know, I think one heretic can sniff out another one. You know, put that label on them. But, you know, free thinkers, people who aren't afraid of playing with ideas, I think we just hit it off.
We hit it off as friends. We had a lot of common interest from biblical studies to history, politics, literature, comic books, everything from our childhoods. Mm-hmm. And we started going to lunch, and we became so comfortable with one another. I don't think we minded talking about our traditions.
There was a sentence somewhere in the book, and I don't recall where you talked about the difference between seeing religion as history and seeing it as parable. Could you guys expand upon that a little bit?
Sure. I think it's an and, not an or. I mean, seeing it as history and as parable. And I think our interests are to put the text in its historical context. We want to know, as best you can know, what the mind of the author was thinking when they phrased the text the way they phrased it. But if it's only history, then it has no relevance outside the university setting. It has no personal relevance. But if it's parable, then it's teaching us timeless truths through a time-bound language and metaphor system. So we want to understand the metaphors in their historical context and then free the meaning so that it speaks to us today as parable.
Rami and I probably start from different places in dealing with the historicity of the Exodus story in which the commandments are set. I tend to view it first as some piece of some kind of history, mm-hmm. and then move toward the story that's bound up in that history and into what I think Rami would call parable to find meaning. Rami, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but many times I think you probably start from parable and work backwards.
Yeah, when we're dealing with the Exodus story, as you know, teaching Bible here at MTSU, one of the things you have to acknowledge from the scholarly setting right away is there's no external corroborating evidence for the Exodus whatsoever. There's just the Bible. And
you can't go to a museum and see the tablets somewhere.
Right, you can't see the tablets. There's no video. There's no audio. Right. There's nothing. And, you know, Cecil B. DeMille doesn't count. So you have to question the historicity. But, so for me, the more valuable way is not to look for a historical context, not to worry about historical context, but to look at the parable nature of it. What's it trying to tell me about life, about how to live?
Do we still respect the Ten Commandments in part because they are so simply stated and yet they have so many complex ramifications?
I want to know more about the word respect. We honor them, we fetishize them, we, you know, make a big deal of them, but we don't follow them.
No.
So the respect doesn't translate into, well, I better do this or that or the other thing. I was just seeing something to get your take on this in the newspaper today, and I didn't know we were going to talk about this, so I don't have the details in my head, but there was a church that had a very large, what they call Touchdown Jesus.
Yes.
Do you know where that was?
Notre Dame.
No, it wasn't Notre Dame. It was someplace else.
They have their own Touchdown Jesus. Yeah.
Okay, this is another church, and it was hit by lightning and caught on fire and was destroyed. And now they're building a different Jesus with his arms open, welcoming everybody. It's 50-some-odd feet tall. You know, when I read the Ten Commandments and it talks about idols, the first thing I thought of was a 50-some-odd-foot Jesus. I mean, that seems to me, you know, I'm not a Christian, but that seems to me as... Didn't you read those commandments?
Thou shalt not have any other gods before me?
Something like
or
that.
Or make an idol?
Well, it's the idol part. I mean, if you're a Christian and you believe Jesus is God, right. Well, there is no problem there. But the idea of idolatry and making this giant statue, you know, I mean, that's been a, within the Protestant world, that's been an area of conflict for, you know, from the Puritans on, when the Puritans went in and smashed the stained glass windows in the churches in England, because of it, they felt it was a kind of idolatry. So, but here we've got this 50-some-odd, you know, giant Jesus.
Well, that's a classic case of the Christian religion bumping up against Southern religion, which is called football. But to track back to your question, I'll back off from the word respect. I would talk of the commandments as embedded.
Yeah, okay.
I think they are embedded in literature, in film, in our corporate imagination, whether we've read them for ourselves or not. So we really can't escape them. We just don't always quite know what we want to do with them.
Yeah. Well, that's an interesting way of putting it. I know that in my classes, oftentimes, some of my students will say, we'll take the commandments sort of take them in extremis. So they'll say, if you ever told a lie, even a white lie, well, then you violated the commandment about thou shalt not lie. Which is not what the actual commandment says, but we violated that commandment, and therefore you're a sinner, and therefore you need, and in their case they would say Jesus to help you, because there's no other way out. But the commandments are much more dynamic than propaganda tools, you know, I think.
We'll take a quick break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. This is MTSU on the Record.
The Middle East Center at MTSU seeks to promote greater understanding of the politics, history, and culture of this vitally important region of the world. Its mission includes the promotion of outreach programs and faculty research. The center sponsors lectures by Middle East experts and scholarly exchanges. We're especially pleased to offer a new interdisciplinary minor in Middle East Studies with courses in Arabic and Hebrew. This is Dr. Alan Hibbard, Center Director.
For all the latest MTSU information, go to mtsunews.com.
We're talking with Reverend Michael Smith and Dr. Rami Shapiro, who is a professor in the philosophy department here at MTSU, about their book, Mountain, Mountain, A Reverend and a Rabbi Talk About the Ten Commandments. We might not have time to get to all the commandments individually, but here are a few things I found interesting. On number two, you shall have no other gods before me. There is, as it is phrased here from Exodus 20, verses 3-6, I am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generation. I thought jealousy was a human weakness. Where is the word jealousy? What is the definition in this context?
I'm going to start with the Hebrew fellow.
Well, I don't think we have to. We can work right with the English. I think that the times in which the text was written, they believed that God was jealous the way you and I might be jealous. And one of the operative myths throughout the Hebrew scripture is going after men, going after women that they shouldn't be going after. And that's supposed to parallel Jews going after gods they shouldn't be going after. So it is jealous, that God is jealous and he wants all of your attention. And that makes total sense in a Bronze Age mentality. I mean, that's what they're going to think. There are lots of gods. We haven't gotten monotheism yet. Monotheism doesn't come till late prophetic period, if even then.
But the first commandment was, I am the Lord your God. And I took that to mean in the reading of that chapter and of that commandment that is God laying down the rule and saying, okay, I am the Alpha and Omega. I am everything. I am everywhere.
That's later. Yeah. That's what I would say about God in my own personal theology.
Mm-hmm.
But in the context of the time, there's, you shall have no other gods before me. There are lots of other gods,
mm-hmm.
but I'm your God.
I'm looking at it with a 21st century mentality.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, this is God saying in that context, I am your God. You need to get used to this. You need to live into this, and you need to give up the other gods. They're not up for debate at this point.
Yeah, right.
It basically took him two commandments mm-hmm. to try to make that impression.
I think that's
basically
a fair statement.
The first and two.
And I would add that in our modern context, in the Christian world, and they mm-hmm. are Christian worlds, not mm-hmm. just one, that this particular commandment or set of commandments still speaks to the challenge of how do you build an undivided heart? Your heart is always being competed for by multiple allegiances. We joked about it a moment ago with football.
You're human. Your human friends, your family, your career.
Or lesser things,
yeah.
even. Whatever it is that commands time, attention, resources, energy can be in competition from my perspective.
Your Facebook page and your Twitter.
Yes. Yeah.
That's not one I have problems with, but that's okay. On number three, you shall not take the name of your God in vain. People used to say to me, to give me an excuse, or to give my father, more accurately, an excuse, whenever he said GD, and I will not say that on the air to avoid offending people's sensibilities. People always told me saying GD is asking God to damn something else, not damning God. Is that just a convenient little loophole?
I don't know about a convenient loophole, but it has nothing to do with the commandment. That is so Southern culture.
That is a total misinterpretation of the commandment.
It is.
Taking God's, because that's what we call taking God's name in vain in popular culture.
Yeah. You shall not cuss would be how a Southerner uh-huh. probably would have written it. But what it's about, in my opinion, Rami may take a different take, I think it's about misusing the reputation of God in support of things that God doesn't want anything to do with.
Yeah, and I think it can apply in court situation where you're swearing, on, you know, this is the whole truth, nothing but the truth, mm-hmm. so help me God. But it's also, if this isn't true, may God strike me down. Oh, yeah. Look, nothing happened, so therefore it must be true. I mean, that's taking God's name in vain.
Yeah, I see. We'll take one more break. We'll be back in just a moment. This is MTSU on the Record.
The Concrete Industry Management Program at MTSU fills the need for trained personnel who know concrete technology and techniques. Our alumni go into the marketplace grounded in basic math and science and able to promote products or services related to the industry. Our participation in the Academic Common Market ensures talented students in other states a chance to enroll on an in-state tuition basis. This is Dr. Heather Brown, Director of the program.
To find out more information on this or other university programs, visit mtsunews.com.
We're talking about a book called Mount and Mountain, Volume 1, A Reverend and a Rabbi Talk About the Ten Commandments with Dr. Rami Shapiro, a member of the MTSU faculty, and Reverend Michael Smith, who is a Baptist pastor. On Commandment number 5, Honor Your Mother and Father, how do we rectify this in both religions, Judaism and Christianity, with the fact that some parents just are not worth respecting, let alone loving? I'm talking about ones who beat their children, for example.
Well, in Judaism, it's the rabbis raise this issue, and for them, it's very clear. The commandment is not love. It's honor, not love.
Mm-hmm.
And they define honor as making sure that your parents, but you can expand it to elders in general, that your parents, when they're no longer economically productive, have shelter, clothes, and food. And you owe that to them because they gave you life, whether they're good parents or bad parents. It's got nothing to do with liking them, caring about them emotionally. You have a cultural, a social obligation to see that your parents are housed, fed, and clothed.
So the way in which we interpret the commandments depends in large part on whether they come to us filtered through Hebrew, Aramaic, King James Version English, 21st century English, because you can read even one word very differently depending upon the context of your own experience.
As is true of any piece of literature.
Yeah.
To track to the one that you were on at the moment, this is a very complicated issue, I think, in Christianity. A sizable segment of Christianity will essentially now accept the perspective Rami That's just articulated. Others are wrestling with it. My own take on it would be that the commandment to honor parent and mother was really the first social safety net we have in history, the way of providing for people in their old age, and that was really the only way to get it done.
Yeah.
And that was an advance, in my opinion, in culture. I think in our time, in a pastoral care context, I will advise people to distance themselves appropriately from abusive people. I will not advise them to drop the Christian role of acting kindly toward even the abusive. But that doesn't mean you put your own body on the line. It may mean that you put mom in an appropriate nursing home mm-hmm. at the right time. But that doesn't mean you're going to love her or feel kindly toward her. You're going to act kindly. One of the places Rami and I have discovered enormous agreement is that so much of religion, genuine religion, finds expression in actions, not doctrine, not theological statements, but what you actually do. Mm. And this is a prime example, this commandment. It's about something you do, not something you feel.
Yeah. On the sixth commandment, how is the word murder interpreted? Thou shalt not kill, or you shall not murder, Exodus 20:13.
Okay. Go ahead, Joanna.
I think consensus in the modern era is that we're talking about intentional murder. We would call it first-degree murder, for lack of a better term, where you sit down and say, I'm going to go out and kill this individual, murder this individual. In the history of the church, we've played with it all over the page. It's been used in the defense of pacifism. It's been used in defense of complete nonviolence. But I think in the narrowest sense, its application has to do with the intentional taking of another human's life.
Yeah, I think it's the same. The original intent from the language seems to be that it's first-degree premeditated homicide. Because there's a lot of places where killing is lauded mm-hmm. in the Hebrew Bible. Yeah. So,
in the context of both 21st century life in the South, in some areas, and perhaps in olden historical times, was it not interpreted to mean you shall not go out and kill someone, as opposed to being devoted to your property rights? If someone trespasses, there are a lot of people who feel that they have the absolute right to shoot first and ask questions later, and they don't consider that murder, even though no one's life is literally physically at stake at that point in time.
Mm-hmm. Well, there I can only fall back on my own work with this. I would read the intent of this command. I can't help it being Christian. I tend to read things through what I perceive mm-hmm. to be the teachings of Christ. I would say that in the life and direction that Christ set for us, that the intentional taking of human life, even in defense of property, is wrong. It's forbidden. Now, self-defense is a different issue. That's a grayer issue for all of us. But to shoot somebody because they're making off with your car is an inappropriate action, insofar as I can discern.
Sure, because I've seen his car.
Nobody tried to steal it anyway, so the issue is moot.
You don't want to. It's just not worth killing somebody.
Yeah. Okay, good old number seven, the adultery issue. I look at this and I think about historically how women have been perceived as chattel and how this has been interpreted in many ways by many different people of many different faiths or no faith whatsoever, as a woman can't cheat on her husband, but a man can do whatever he wants.
I think what they were doing with this and the other nine is trying to identify what the breaking points are. So you can do a lot of lying, and the Ten Commandments doesn't say a thing about it. Mm-hmm. But lying in court, they say that now we have, if we can't trust the court system, social cohesion falls apart. There's no commandment against premarital sex, right? There's mm-hmm. no commandment against polygamy. It's just adultery. And I think the reason is, again, because that's the point that breaks the social bond. When you're breaking that unit, that husband-wife bond, then everything starts to crumble. But up to that point, the Ten Commandments, not the Bible as a whole, but the Ten Commandments seems to be silent. So I think that's what they're looking at, is this is what they imagine to be the tipping point that would just knock the whole society into a tailspin.
Have we come to confuse over the years what these commandments mean with what are actually traditions within certain faiths? For example, you mentioned premarital sexual relationships. Well, there are many clergy people of many faiths who will tell you that that is a sin, but that doesn't seem to be what is meant by the word adultery in the context of the seventh commandment.
Right. Well, I'd agree with you on that. Often, at least in American church life, I'm not going to pick on anyone else. Uh-huh. I live here. But in American church life, when we say this is the interpretation, what we're really saying is this is what mom and dad told me, or grandfather and grandfather told me, or old preacher so-and-so told me. And at most we will say, and the ones before them did too. That's as far back as we go in history. Mm-hmm. So we're going to read more often than not the commandments or any other ancient text as if it were fresh on the newspaper and we were just pouring our 21st century and 20th century concepts into it. Adultery is a much more narrow term, as I understand it, in the Ten Commandments than we tend to treat it. Now, that being said, we still have to wrestle with what do we do with relationships. But I don't think the commandments really the starting point for that discussion.
Yeah.
All Ten Commandments taken together are about, at least in one sense, and Rami, just shoot me down if you want to. It wouldn't be the first or last time. But all the commandments are really about how can you make a viable, sustainable human society?
Yeah.
You put it well. What are the breaking points? I would have also said, what are the points toward which we are always working in order to create and sustain a viable community?
So the way that you see it, is it not that God will strike you down if you violate them, but you will be putting yourself in a world of hurt?
You can put yourself in a world of hurt, and you can begin to disintegrate your community.
Let me, before we leave this one.
Go ahead.
I don't want to give the listener the impression that we're against also reading the commandments through a 21st
sure.
century lens.
Right.
Unlike the arguments over the Constitution of the United States, where people say, oh, we're going to get back to the original, you know, we're the originalists.
There is no Supreme Court of the Ten Commandments.
Well, true, but there's also no, this is an interesting question to ask, though I haven't got an answer. There are no originalists about the Bible. It's always, what does it mean today? No one's trying to say, well, this is what it meant thousands of years ago, and that's all it means, and we have to live according to that. In Judaism, and I know in Christianity also, but in Judaism, the rabbinic tradition is constantly rereading the text in light of the current generation. So it's a living document, just the way I think the Constitution is, but there's challenges to that. It's a living document. And that means that, you do want to interpret it according to 21st century, but you ought to do it with an understanding of all the centuries that came before, so you can see how it's been used in different ways. And in Judaism, that's the study of the rabbinic tradition, to see how the rabbis understood these different things over the last 2,500 years, and then say, okay, and I think this, and put my own two cents worth in. So it's not a bad thing to do to interpret these, but it shouldn't be done as if today's interpretation is what they meant when they wrote it.
Right. Yeah. We'll take one more brief break, and we'll be right back. This is MTSU on the Record.
Expanding Your Horizons is an annual hands-on science and math conference for middle and high school girls. EYH enables girls to investigate careers in science and math and to talk with female leaders in those fields that are so essential to our nation's future. EYH also provides the girls with fun hands-on activities and allows them to meet girls with similar interests. I'm Dr. Judith Iriarte-Gross, EYH Director.
For all the latest MTSU information, go to mtsunews.com.
We're talking with Dr. Rami Shapiro of the MTSU Philosophy Department and Michael Smith. Rami is an ordained rabbi. Michael is a Baptist pastor. When the two of you were discussing the Ten Commandments, did it remind you of your days in seminary and rabbinical school, respectively?
For me, it was better.
Better?
And I would echo that. Yeah. At least from my experience, here are two fellows who've been in the game a long time. And I use the word game in a positive sense. It's just the world we live in, with synagogue and our own people, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
These were two experienced people who sat down and who had enough self-confidence just to say what was on their mind to each other and then bat it back and forth. So for me, that was a much more invigorating experience than the rather arid experience of seminary.
Yeah, I agree with that. And when I was in seminary, I was in my 20s.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm in my 60s now. So this was written a couple of years ago. It was just a much more dynamic give and take about the text. And we come from different traditions. So we got that richness out of it. And there was no attempt, and I'm not saying this is what seminary is like exactly, but there was no attempt to convince one another. It was just, I'm coming from here, and how do you respond to that? And and the book reflects this, it's totally dialogical.
Was it more that seminary was more antiseptic? That there wasn't a personal touch? That, you know, but you two were communicating on a personal level as well as an ideological or philosophical level.
Yeah, antiseptic may not be the right word. The relationship's crucial. This is all done in the context of an evolving friendship, which changes the conversation. I think we know each other reasonably well. On the seminary front, antiseptic may not be the right word, but in seminary, number one, you're being taught your tradition, whatever it is.
But you do have to learn about
and
other
traditions.
And you learn
about other traditions, but they are treated as the other, primarily. You may be encouraged to forge ecumenical relationships, but you seldom have anyone in the room with you day after day who's of another tradition.
Right. Mm-hmm.
This is the difference. We lived in the same community here in Murfreesboro at that time, and friendship was the context. I would just add as a tag that I think friendship may actually be the best vehicle for reapproachment between people from different traditions over time.
You're both men of ideas. Are we becoming less open-minded and more doctrinaire about our faith, or is that just an illusion put forth by the commercial media to get ratings?
I think it's probably both, but I think that the more... Well, my experience in the classroom is a lot of times that when you meet someone who's really different, and they've got coming from a different, and usually it's a different Christian frame, but it's a different frame than you have, there's an immediate reaction of their other, I've got to defend my system, I'm going to defend my tradition. And then slowly, as you have more confidence and trust in the friendships that emerge in a classroom even, there's a moving out again. So I think there is, in general, I think there's a circling of the wagons. People beginning there, because the other is always in our face, and that makes us nervous.
What? Why? What are we afraid of?
Change. Hearing something that we didn't hear when we were growing up. To me, the exciting thing is to hear how Mike heard these texts and hear in the past, hears them in the present and applies them. I mean, that was the best thing. And I knew it was going to be different than me. Mm-hmm. That was the point of, otherwise I could stay home and
but
talk to myself.
That's the exciting part.
That's the exciting part.
Yes.
Yeah. But not everyone finds that exciting. They find it threatening.
Reverend Michael Smith and Dr. Rami Shapiro, authors of Mountain Mountain, A Reverend and a Rabbi Talk About the Ten Commandments, Volume 1. Thanks for being with us, guys.
Thank you.
MTSU On the Record, a news and information program about Middle Tennessee State University, is produced by the university's Marketing and Communications Office, which is solely responsible for its content. Read more about MTSU at our website, mtsunews.com. Podcasts of this program are available at mtsunews.com and on iTunes.